Game On on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for soundtracking our afternoon. It's Thursday, the 26th of August. I'm Damian Lawler, and this is Game On. Coming up today, goal for Ireland in Tokyo as Ellen Keane gets Ireland off the mark.
When I dove in, my goggles filled up with water, so I think maybe that was a good thing because I couldn't see where the girls were around me, but I just had a game plan in mind and I stuck to that, and that's exactly what I did.
Yeah, it's a busy day on the soccer front too. Paul Curry is with us to dissect Stephen Kenny's Irish squad, the Champions League draw and Shamrock Rovers in European action.
Finn. Good cross, deep Scales, it's good. Liam Scales has come up with the goods. Really clever header by the Celtic bound wing back Liam Scales, and that's a huge second goal now for Shamrock Rovers.
And in Gaelic football, All-Ireland winners Colm Cavanagh and Paul Kerrigan start our build to Saturday's semi-final between Kerry and Tyrone.
And I honestly say that every time we played them, we felt we could win. And we felt that time that we could win. And whatever it was with Tyrone, I felt they had a serious ability. We were doing more homework on them at this stage. But I just felt whatever they were playing to, they were playing to this level all year. When they came to Kerry, they had that ability to lift it up another notch.
Yeah, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
The big story of the day is Liam Cahill committing his future to Waterford. Well, it's the big story of the day if you're from Waterford or Tipperary. Despite massive speculation, he would be appointed the next Tipperary manager. It's a shock and not a shock at the same time, because Liam was hugely regarded in Waterford by board and players alike, and he has huge regard for them. He met with Tipperary last week, but it just hasn't happened. And while it's great news for Waterford, it does leave Tipperary without an obvious successor now, so Waterford will feel they can push ahead for an All-Ireland title. Meanwhile, Tipperary's next appointment must be on the money to bring their promising crop of youngsters right up to the mark to challenge Limerick. But on to Paralympics now, and let's get you right up to date on how a golden day for Team Ireland went in Tokyo. There for us, Siobhan Madigan.
Ellen Keane today joined Ireland's Golden Club as the country's latest Paralympic champion. Having laid down a marker with a personal best in her morning heat, the 26-year-old from Clontarf in North Dublin obliterated that time this evening to secure gold in the 100-metre breaststroke SB8 event. Keane touched the wall in a winning time of 1 minute 19.93 seconds as New Zealand's Sophie Pascoe offed the villain to the Dubliner, this time had to settle for silver. Afterwards, Ellen Keane spoke with Eamon Horan.
Silly question first, your immediate thoughts after securing a gold medal?
I don't think it's fully sank in yet. When I dove in, my goggles filled up with water, so I think maybe that was a good thing because I couldn't see where the girls were around me. Just on the turn, I kind of saw Sophie a little bit, but I just had a game plan in mind and I stuck to that and just kept. The last thing my coach said before I went in was, if I need to push you in a wheelchair home, I want those legs wrecked. And that's exactly what I did.
And what was your game plan?
I tend to rush my stroke when I'm trying to go fast. So for me, it was just like, I'm a strong person, and if I start to rush my stroke, like, I actually don't get any power from my legs. So it was more about being long and strong and controlled and count my strokes and try and keep it as streamlined as possible.
And a blistering pace as well, 1:19.93.
Yeah, geez, I texted my boyfriend and I was like, after my heat, and he was really happy for me going in first. And I was like, I don't care what happens, if I go sub 20, I'll be happy. And that's exactly what I did.
And a lot of your colleagues on Team Ireland after your heat today commented about how you were in such a place with steely resolve and you were very determined. You were very much in the zone, Ellen,
yeah,
coming to tonight's final.
Yeah, definitely. I took a break from social media because I felt like it was distracting me a bit, and even going online, I felt like the nerves creeping in. And for this Games, I wanted to be as present as possible, and that's really what I've been doing. And I think this is the first Games that I've been at where I've not been nervous. I've been so calm. Even last night, I was a little bit worried as to how calm I was. But then this morning for the heats, I was a little bit nervous, and just for the final, I was calm again. So I think I kind of just knew that I was capable of doing something great, and it was trusting that and trusting myself. And I'm nearly glad that I had the Games were postponed, because I've had that time to really work on myself. And I usually get really nervous going to competitions, and I think the past 18 months I've just learned to trust myself, and that's kind of what happened here today.
You've come a long way from the girl who made her debut back in Beijing.
I know. Geez, that was so long ago, wasn't it? And to be honest, I thought I would have won a gold medal a long time ago, and it did get to me throughout the years. And just having that break and having that time off, it made me miss the sport, made me fall in love with the sport again. And I knew coming here, this was another opportunity, and kind of like an opportunity to enjoy it and see really what I'm capable of. I didn't put any pressure on myself for a medal. I just wanted a PB. And even when I finished, I turned to the girls and I was like, it only took like 8 years for me to get a PB, and there we go.
But the experience was crucial out there, was it?
Yeah, definitely. And the girls I was racing against, you know, it's the world has really stepped on, and it was just such a fun race. Even in the heat this morning, racing Sophie was really good to be able to do, and just having not raced in 2 years, it was really fun.
And to beat a Paralympic legend for that top spot, does it make it all the more sweeter?
I nearly get starstruck when I'm beside her. I'm like, hi. And even just for the heat and final warm-up, we were both in the same lane, and I was like, but no, it's great, and she's great to race against.
And bronze 5 years ago, gold today, wow.
I know, I don't need that silver, it's fine. But I actually just want to take this opportunity to say hi to my family who are stuck at home. I know they did get up this morning at 3 a.m. to watch me race, so I'm really grateful to them and all their support. And I'm collecting badges for my dad, because whenever he comes to the games, he does love to collect badges, so I am building the collection.
There are reports of champagne corks popping in and around Clontarf. It's not even new back home.
As long as my dog is okay. Last night I was just looking at videos of my dog being like, it'll all be worth it, I'll come home to you.
And what's your dog's name, Ellen?
He's Denny. He's a little sausage dog. His name's Denny.
And will he be aware of the magnitude of his owner's achievement?
I hope so. I'm just more afraid because my parents have a dog and he's getting on really well there. I hope he comes home to me.
But you have a gold medal, why wouldn't he?
Exactly.
Ellen Keane, thank you very much.
Thank
and well
you
done.
Guys.
Well
thank
done.
You.
In a mark of the level of the competition, Canada's Katarina Roxon, who was the defending champion, finished outside the medals tonight. Limerick's Roisin Ní Riain is having a games to remember, finishing sixth in the 100 backstroke final this evening, following up on an eighth place finish in the final of the 100 butterfly on day one. Another world record smashed here as gold went to Gia Perugellini from the USA. In the equestrian arena, Rosemary Gaffney and Tamsin Addison competed in the grade 4 and 5 individual tests. For 63-year-old Gaffney, it was a 15th place finish, but really this was the realisation of a dream come true for the Kilkenny-based teacher.
A dream come true. I'm a slow developer, but being here now means the world to me. It's been a huge emotional roller coaster. My mare was really good. She really listened to me in the arena. She was super. I couldn't be more pleased with her. It's a huge environment here for the horses, you know. And although there isn't a big crowd here, it feels as if there's a big crowd. The lights and everything else, we wouldn't be used to that coming from Clonmel, you know. I mean, for goodness sake, they don't have many arenas like this in Tipperary or Kilkenny, where I'm teaching.
But overall, you'll go away happy this evening?
Overall, I'll go away thrilled.
Tamsin Addison also made her games debut tonight and scored 66.405% for her routine. She failed to make the freestyle event, but will return for the team competition over the course of the weekend. Earlier, the tandem duo of Katie George Dunleavy and Eve McChrystal set a new national record time of 1 minute 9.044 seconds, which was their best ever. In the time trial event at the Velodrome, they finished in sixth position. Games debutante Ronan Grimes also recorded a personal best in finishing 15th in his time trial final. His ride of 1 minute 8.62 seconds saw him cut his previous best by a huge margin. Spain's Cabello won the event. He needed a world record, though, to do so. Grimes afterwards spoke with his fellow Galway man, Darren Frehel.
It's a big one. You think it's just going to be same as any other race, but even though there's no crowds here, you know, you've been away for 10, 12 weeks of the last 14, and it's just to do the first race is a big release of emotion, I think. Even though it wouldn't be a strong targeted event for me, it was nice just to get a good ride out for myself anyways. The kilo is just too short. You don't have the big power for those kind of efforts, but it's a good omen, hopefully, for the longer pursuit tomorrow and the time trial to come.
And in table tennis, Colin Judge, who had been scheduled to compete today, was handed a walkover. He will now play in the quarterfinals of the competition tomorrow, following the withdrawal earlier of his Brazilian opponent.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Yeah, football chat now. Paul Curry is with us here in studio. The Champions League draw is ongoing, but we've got three Irish internationals upcoming. And let's hear first of all from Irish manager Stephen Kenny, Tony O'Donoghue, who was with him. And Tony talked through the squad with Stephen, starting with Darren Randolph's omission.
No, I think Darren is still young in goalkeeping terms, and certainly he's obviously had injuries. He's back fit now, but he also had COVID as well recently, so it's hindered his training. He's been training well lately, but the three goalkeepers have been excellent in the last game. Gavin Bazunu and Quaven Kelleher were excellent, so it certainly doesn't spell the end for Darren in that regard.
Those three keepers though are very inexperienced, quite young. Who's your number one of those three?
Well, that's the good thing about competition. You know, I think, all right, you can say that they're inexperienced, but they're talented. We have talented goalkeepers, and we're proud to have them. We believe in them, and, you know, I think we have good options.
Looking at your defensive options, and I noticed that Omar Bamadeli is in now. He's been showing tremendous form. He's such a young kid as well, but with a great career, hopefully, ahead of him.
Yeah, I managed to see the game on Tuesday night. They obviously, in the Carabao Cup, they won 6-0, and Andrew is a very accomplished footballer, very exciting player, really good attributes, still very young, but a lot of very good attributes, and they think very highly of him at Norwich. I think all the players in the squad are ready to play, and that's genuinely how I feel.
Looking at the midfield, Jeff Hendrick is back in the squad. Alan Brown missing. Why is he missing?
Alan is a close contact at the moment, so he's ruled out of the first game, and he also has an injury, so, you know, we're strongly considering having Alan Brown and Callum Robinson available for the second two games in Dublin. So that's what we'll have to wait and see how that goes. But it's a possibility. You know, I think we still have a strong squad. I think I'm excited by the squad. We've got experienced defenders. We're playing really well. We've got exciting young forwards who are making their mark. Still have a lot all to prove, of course, but have a lot of talent. And listen, it's absolutely fantastic. We're playing Portugal away. Big crowd in Faro, and then we play in the Aviva. We've capped 13 players make their competitive international debut, and they've been in front of nobody, empty seats in the Aviva in the four games we've had there. So now this is the first time that they're all able to be inspired by the crowd. When you dream of playing for Ireland, you dream walk out and playing in front of a crowd, not an empty stadium. And I think that's a bit of a surreal experience for them, so they can experience the real thing now against Azerbaijan and against Serbia next week. And it's very exciting for them, and they'll be determined to do themselves justice.
Looking at your frontline strikers, again, this is a lot of youth in the squad. You really have to look at where the goals are coming from, and you have to hope that one of those boys steps up.
Well, I think Shane Long will be delighted that you refer to him as a young striker. You know, I think there's a balance between obviously experienced players like James Collins and Shane Long and Daryl Horgan, and some youthful players, you know, like Troy Parra-Adamaida, Aaron Connolly, of course. So there is a balance there, and that's those players are looking forward to the games.
Have you had a chance to look at the Portugal squad that came out this morning as well? Obviously Ronaldo among them, and looking for his world record 110th international goal.
Yeah, you know, it's a great game going to Portugal to play away. The players should be hugely motivated by that, and it's a game that they'll always want to play in, and I think we look forward to that game. It's a game that we want to perform well in. And over the three games in 6 days, quick turnaround, three World Cup qualifiers in 6 days, Portugal, Azerbaijan and Serbia. So it's a huge challenge for us, and but one that we want to meet head on. We want to have a really good week.
And have you set yourself a target of those 9 points available?
No, there are 9 points available, and that is important to know. Like, it's a good week can change things, and that's can give a different complexion. And admittedly, they're tough games, but we're excited by them, and we're determined to do ourselves justice and put in strong performances over the week.
Now, the Champions League and Shamrock Rovers out in Europe are also on our menu tonight, but we'll keep it with the Irish squad. And former Irish under-21 international Paul Curry joins us now. Paul, what leaps out at you from that squad announcement?
I mean, Damien, it's difficult to get too excited about the squad, and I don't want to be negative from the get-go, but I mean, what really stands out for me is the lack of strength and depth that we have in the squad, and actually the level that our players are playing at. To see, I think it's five individuals who are applying their trade in League One at the moment, probably gives you a bit of a sense of where we're at within the national team. Outside of that, I think from our goalkeepers and our defenders, I think we've got a relatively good foundation to build on there. You know, the keepers are obviously young, they're at good clubs though, and there's certainly potential to work on. But when you look at, we would imagine we go with a back five, the likes of Coleman, Doherty, Duffy, Egan, O'Shea, and probably McLean as a left wing back. That's not actually a bad foundation to build on. And their players, the likes of Coleman and Duffy, who of the few are actually playing in the Premier League quite regularly. So that would give you, I mean, a bit of hope. We're going to need them. They're very difficult fixtures, particularly Portugal away, when you think of the depth and the strength and the talent that they have in the final third. That back five is going to be tested, but that's something that you can build on. And then into the midfield, players aren't playing very regularly. I have major question marks about our ability to actually retain possession. I'm not sure we've too many passes of the ball in that middle third. And then when you look to the final third and where the goals have come from, we've had this major question mark for the last 2-3 years. We haven't seen somebody who's come in post Robbie Keane who's actually, you know, really given us a focal point or really contributed with regular goals, and that is still a major worry for us.
Saw last night where Callum Robinson withdrew for COVID related issues. He's been there before. Alan Brown has gone as well. And you kind of say to yourself, Paul, the manager's had no luck whatsoever. And I think that's almost factual. At the same time, it probably is the case for most managers that players dip in and out with COVID these days. And you simply have to get on with it. You look at the fixture list, Portugal, Azerbaijan, Serbia. These games are defining, really, aren't they? And you look at the squad and there's nothing that really roars with excitement at you.
No, there's not. And we're talking about potential, and it's great that we've potential in the likes of your Troy Parrott and your Adam Meadas, who can potentially, and a Jason Malumbi, who can potentially grow into the Irish jersey and be your 30, 40, 50 cap type players. It's a major ask for them to step up to this level. Like, it really, really is. And Stephen Kenny is probably a bit unfortunate that, you know, we had a real core group of players who seem to all fall out of the Irish squad at the same time, and he's not, as you see, got a huge strength and depth with which to choose from, and we're seeing less and less Irish players playing in the Premier League at the moment. So he hasn't been blessed with regards to, you know, the COVID implications that have been on the squad over the last number of fixtures. But we have to be realistic. Like, I thought at the beginning of this campaign it was a case of, listen, completely rule out any chance of qualification. This is, let's get back to the basics, let's put a foundation in place, let's actually have an identity about how we want to play, and that's what the fans are roaring out for. At least Kenny's trying to do that. It's been slow, it is still going to be slow, it's going to take time. Do I think if we change manager, brought in somebody else, we start to see drastically different results? I don't. I think we're just at a stage now where we need to consolidate, get our foundation in place, get our philosophy of play, and give the youngsters opportunities. Yes, it's going to result in some heavy defeats or some frustrating results, but you have to give them time still.
Do you think he'll be given the backing? I look maybe beneath the structures, Paul, and there do appear to be green shoots like Evan Ferguson, Andrew Moran, Kevin Zeffi, some very, very exciting young underage players coming through, maybe schoolboy football or maybe very early appearances with their clubs, and then they're moving on. So be excited about that, but that's a long way off. Do you give the manager, who has a plan and has a massive passion for it, is missing luck, do you just back him for this campaign and say, get that structure, get that identity, and try and build something from there?
Yeah, I mean, the problems stem far greater than Stephen Kenny. I was involved in underage football a long, long time ago, and even then we were miles behind, say, the academy structures in the UK, and it seems that we have been so late to correct what was so wrong about our underage system. Like, yes, local clubs and DDSL clubs have done so much for Irish football, but the structure was never there. So what you're hoping is, between the League of Ireland underage leagues, between the younger players getting opportunities in the League of Ireland, and there seems to be a good pathway now for players to get into under 23 sides, the likes of Evan Ferguson that you mentioned, you're hoping that these guys tend to get a bit more of an opportunity, and then they start to get some first team minutes. You look at Troy Parrott, who's got a really good loan deal to MK Dons, great opportunity to go play, and the chance then to progress into maybe a Tottenham first team, and you're hoping that you start to see a bit more of a stream of players who can actually impact a Premier Division or maybe the Championship, and then do so with the international team.
Yeah, we wish them luck, because I think their template is there, and the style of play that he played underage was fantastic to watch. Let's just see, does he get the time and space to drive it on to senior level as well? It's a big night too, Paul, for your old club Shamrock Rovers to play Flora Tallinn at 7:45 in the Tallaght Stadium in the Europa Conference League. Just from a layman's point of view, Tallinn pressed Rovers last time around, and they got 4 goals. Will they feel it'll be easy enough to do the same thing again?
I think Stephen Bradley, when he reflected on the performance of last week, I think he'd be a bit frustrated with how things went and probably disappointed in some of the performances, because we saw so many uncharacteristic individual errors, particularly from the back five at Shamrock Rovers. And
cost him four goals, Paul, effectively.
Yeah, it cost him, and it could potentially cost him the whole tie. You know, when you look at opportunities for Irish clubs to get into the group stage of whether it be the Europa League or the Conference League, this is a massive chance for Shamrock Rovers. And I think when he reflects on it, he'll look at the performance in probably two different views. There was Shamrock Rovers out of possession and there was Shamrock Rovers in possession. Out of possession, they were a shambles. You know, gaps all over the pitch, gaps in the back five, gaps in the middle of the park. And like you mentioned, every time Flora Tallon pressed Bang. And went forward, it looked like they were going to get through. And Byron Alamanis, really strong save in the second half, the tie be over.
Was that down to Lee Grace being missing, or was it down to lack of concentration, Paul, or was it down to a team used to certain standards in the domestic league but maybe not anticipating the bar was going to go that much higher away?
I mean, Stephen Bradley said before the first leg that he expected that they were going to be better than Slovan Bratislava, so you can't say they underestimated them. I've heard so many people talking about Lee Grace this week. He's become the best centre half in the league without
I'm a Tipperary man, so I'm going to big him up anyway. It has to happen.
But of course Lee has been part of that Joey O'Brien and Roberto Lopez back three who've been so good, but Sean Hoare is an experienced defender. He's played in Europe with Dundalk. That shouldn't have been a result of so many errors and so many chances coughed up. I just think you put it down to an off night.
Okay.
I think they got, you know, probably hit and sucker punched a couple of times. And when that happens early in the game, sometimes you can lose a bit of confidence. You can kind of be chasing the game a bit. And you're hoping that tonight they can actually rectify that, because they're probably going to need to keep clean sheet if they're going to go through. But when you flip it over, I thought in possession they were actually really good. You know, they were patient in their build-up play. They created overloads, which they always tried to do down the flanks, and they created a number of different chances. And if you can build on that and you can hope that they can shut them out at the other end, it does give them a chance. But probably, if you're asking me, I think they've left themselves a bit too much to do, because Flora do look good, and Sapinen, who plays in the final third, has got loads of goals in Europe already this year.
And that last goal after Rovers got their second, that was a real punch to the stomach. It just took the wind out of everybody, because you said they had a right chance at 3-2. Do you think it's a bridge too far, or how can Rovers, who almost average two goals a game, how can they turn it around to their advantage here tonight?
Well, first and foremost, you bring it back to Bratislava. They were two goals down, and they gave them a right run for their money out that night out in Tala. And I think I heard Alan Cawley speaking about it, and I agree with them. Flora Tallon are not as good as Bratislava. If Shamrock Rovers can produce the performance they had against Bratislava, they'll most certainly be within the tie. What you have to point out is they have to score first.
Yeah.
You know, if Flora Tallon score first, this is, you know, game over. You're chasing, you're going to leave so many gaps, and they're too good in the final third. But there's still hope there. There certainly is hope there. You score the first goal, the fans get behind you, bit of momentum, you're still only one goal away from the opposition, you can drag it into extra time. I think with the way they performed over the last number of weeks, bar last week's performance out in Estonia, they've been good. They've got goals in their team, they've got creative players, and you're just hoping that the uncharacteristic mistakes, the gaps that they left last week, aren't there again this weekend in Tala.
Well, let's finish this chat on a positive. So 3,500 people at the ground, close to €3 million if they win the game, a gateway into the big time, really. What would it mean for the club, Paul, in your opinion? And let's hope they can do it.
Well, we spoke 5 minutes ago about the foundations that you want to see in Irish football. They're a club who have invested heavily in their academy. You see the likes of Gavin Bazunu who's gone, Kevin Zeffie is gone. If they're able to, one, plough the money into their academy to produce players for their first team, that's going to benefit Irish football. And then also they can strengthen their senior squad. You know, Jack Byrne left last year, they probably haven't replaced him. Getting into the group stages, greater resources, get better players into the club and hopefully take it to a next level. And with this Conference League, Damien, we have an opportunity of Irish clubs not qualifying every year, but maybe every second year. And with those resources available, that's where you tend to hope that the facilities, the coaching, everything around players at a young age improves. And that's the sort of pathway you can hope with these fixtures. So fingers crossed. Listen, they're going to sell Liam Scales as well this week, probably get €500,000. You qualify for Europe, you sell Liam Scales, €3.5 million. What a difference that makes to an Irish club.
What a Christmas party you'll have this time around. So that's Rovers versus Flora Tallon, 7:45, Tala Stadium. The other big news, I suppose, it's ongoing at the moment, Paul, is the Champions League draw. And just looking at the screen in front of us, Group A and Group B catch my eye straight away. Will you talk us through, I suppose, the big English teams, Paul, and who their main competitors are?
Yeah, so Man City have been drawn against Paris Saint-Germain, RB Leipzig, and Club Brugge, and you know with Messi just gone to Paris Saint-Germain, Neymar up top, but they're probably the most spoken about club in Europe at the moment. That's going to be a mouth-watering fixture, and Leipzig, who were involved in Manchester United's group, if I'm not wrong, last year with Paris Saint-Germain, actually knocked Manchester United out. So that you know.
They've been coming for the last few years too,
They have, and they were in a Champions League semi-final not too long ago. So that's going to be a really sticky group for Man City to get out of. But with the players they have, you would imagine that it'll be a Paris Saint-Germain, Man City 1-2.
And Paris have nailed their colours to the mast, really, in terms of their aspirations for this year. It's Champions League, really, or nothing else, Paul, if you're reading between the lines.
It is, and similarly with Man City. You know, both sets of owners have probably been spoiled with domestic success. They've won every trophy in their league, and now they're really, you know, gung ho about the Champions League. And for Pep Guardiola, who said he's gonna wrap up at the end of his contract, this is the one that the owners really want. This is what they've invested so heavily in. You would imagine the two of them will get out of the group, and once they get out of the group, you'd be a silly man to bet against either one of those squads going on to win the Champions League.
Group B looks tasty as well, Paul. I'm looking at Liverpool, Atletico Madrid, Porto, and Milan.
Yeah, the one thing that you'd say about that group from a Liverpool fan point of view is Milan is probably the one team that you wanted to avoid in Pot 4. Listen, AC Milan aren't the AC Milan of old, but they're certainly still a dangerous prospect. And you look, you know, like Wolfsburg, Malmo, Young Boys are some of the teams they could have drawn. That tends to leave it a bit more open. Atletico Madrid, Liverpool have had problems with them. The Champions League went out, it was 2 years ago, to Diego Simeone's side. Porto, not an easy away day. So they've certainly, between Man City and Liverpool, they've got a bit of work to do within those groups.
I'm just looking at Group D. We're finished chatting about Shamrock Rovers. I see at the end of Group D, Sheriff, a team that Irish football will be quite familiar with too. Shakhtar Donetsk, Real Madrid, and Inter as well. That's an interesting one too.
It is, because it's astonishing to think that Dundalk knocked Sheriff out of the Europa League only last year, and look where they've progressed on to. So it gives us hope. They've probably had a bit more of a favourable draw to get there, but it shows with the right draw and a
pathway.
Bit of luck.
Pathway is the word you mentioned.
It exactly.
Chelsea fans, Group H, Juve, Zenit, Malmo. Chelsea would be happy enough with that, will they, Paul?
Well, you're speaking to a Chelsea fan here, and when I saw the teams coming out, I thought that's a good draw. Juventus, you know, absolutely slaughtered with COVID, and financially have struggled a bit. They've an ageing squad who are pushing on. You'd still expect that Chelsea and Juve would progress out of that group. Chelsea have been, you know, very impressive. You saw Lukaku on the weekend. It seems as if they've kind of given them that final piece of the jigsaw. You'd imagine, given the confidence that they would have gained from winning the competition last year, that both, you know, Chelsea and Juve progress from there.
Group E and Group F then, just to finish off, like, I look at Group E, Bayern, Barcelona, Benfica, and Dynamo Kiev.
Yeah, Barcelona, you know, mass exodus of players over the last number of weeks, major financial trouble, doesn't seem like the most stable place at the moment. It's a group that you would expect them to get out of, but Benfica have always been kind of a bit of a team who've been a dangerous prospect for many oppositions who have gone there to Portugal. And Bayern Munich, you always expect with the Germans and being so efficient getting out of that group. So Bayern, Barcelona, you would imagine it's the three B's that, you know, between them, you'd expect the two to qualify.
In Group F, Man United meet last year's Europa League finalist Villarreal. Atlanta and Young Boys are there. And I'm just thinking to myself, if United don't get out of that group, I don't think you need to be a genius to figure out what's going to happen next.
Well, it's the easiest of the eight groups. I guess the one thing with Manchester United is I'm still not entirely sure what to expect every time they go out. Sometimes they're brilliant, it seems, when they're playing better opposition. They tend to raise their game, but they couldn't have been drawn a better group. And as a Chelsea fan looking at Manu, I'd be one who said Manu always get the easy groups in Europe.
Yeah. Right, thanks for that, Paul. Thanks for the chat. We'll chat you again just to pre-kickoff for Shamrock Rovers, but time for a break. We'll be back soon with a chat with Colm Kavanagh and Paul Kerrigan, looking ahead to all the Gaelic football action at the weekend.
FM. Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein. Game on.
Gaelic football.
Now, ahead of Saturday's All-Ireland semi-final between Kerry and Tyrone at Croke Park at 3:30 p.m, joined by All-Ireland winners Colm Kavanagh and Paul Kerrigan. Guys, very, very welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Good to have you along. I suppose, Colm, I'll just come to you first of all. How are things in your county? The whole COVID thing was a serious distraction for, I suppose, everybody in the GEA, but most of all you guys. And from what you've heard, Colm, how are things now?
It seems to be fairly under control. I think up here the COVID cases have ramped significantly back up just in the community as a general point. Obviously on the back of that, then from what we can gather, a few of the players and whatever backroom teams have picked it up in that regard. But from chatting a few of the boys there this week, I think the majority of things have settled down, and they're ready to get back at it as such. And it's going to be a difficult one, just knowing how the last impacts on the last few weeks is going to take its toll on them at the weekend. But by and large, I think the squad is fairly okay, and feeling as well as can be at this stage.
Is the vibe, Colm, that maybe it's going to be a fairly full strength squad that will make it for the game?
I believe so. I'm fairly out of the loop now. Yeah. At this stage, you do hear an awful lot of rumblings that a couple of guys were fairly hit hard with it and were obviously hospitalised and whatnot. But the more recent sort of comments have been that the guys should and are looking hoping that there will be a full squad available at the weekend. So that's all Tron can hope for at this stage.
Paul, it certainly wouldn't be an easy time for Kerry either, having to kind of deal with this in their own way.
No, I think David Moran said maybe in 2-3 weeks is the best kind of leading time that they'd like to games. And from our own experiences, I'd say we both say the same. I suppose they've been bouncing along nicely right through the league and through championships, on a bit of a roll, playing every couple of weeks. And I suppose they would have been obviously very happy with their Munster final kind of performance against Cork, and looking forward to going against Tyrone and who came through a really good Ulster Championship in 2 weeks' time. And obviously it's not happened. I suppose on the positive, I suppose maybe it gives them the chance, like sakes of Darren Wyman's injury, to clear up for him, who'd be a major player for them. But other than that, I'd say they would have been hoping to play it a bit sooner rather than later.
Paul, I guess that at the start of the season, the S&C coaches and the manager, they try and peak at the right time, and it won't be easy to kind of go down through the gears and go back up again in time for this one.
No, like they're so methodical, and when at the start of any championship, the S&C coach has maybe a couple of different plans depending on whether you're successful in your province or you have to go to qualifier route. They would have probably looked at the length of the season and had their plan, and it looked like it was working for them. To be honest with you, it looked like they're hopping off the ground right through the league and into the championship. But look, at the end of the day, it's still an All-Ireland semi. I know they may have to wait an extra couple of weeks, but look, they look fairly primed for. I'm sure they probably have plenty of internal games to make up for what they're missing, and probably the competition is huge, and it gave them a chance to look at guys and maybe put the fellas in the shop window to start for an All-Ireland semi-final for themselves.
Colm, just from your own perspective, I know you're a very busy man with family and work. I know you've given massive service to your county. Were you in any way tempted to shake a leg and come back in maybe for this season, especially with the new management and the new setup?
I was waiting for a call there whenever COVID hit. I was hoping for one. It's great to see where Tyrone are, and I've been asked this question probably fairly a lot recently, because obviously Tyrone have won Ulster and come through a couple of hard battles, and now I've made it in an All-Ireland semi-final, and given their massive underdogs in this game. But it's great to see. I can firmly sit back in the stands now and watch and really enjoy. Hopefully Tyrone this week putting on a show and competing at the very least at this stage. So, I did cross my mind in the last few weeks that during all these guys getting COVID, I was hoping that I might have got a late call, but it hasn't come. So unfortunately not.
And Colm, what has impressed you most about Tyrone since the new regime came in?
I think they're playing a bit more freer than we have the last few years. I suppose my last couple of years experience playing with Tyrone was that the lads played at a certain level, and there was nearly like a wee bit of a fear or handbrake put on the lads. And just watching them this year and watching, maybe it's to do with the personnel coming, the new guys coming in, and a lot maybe lads are younger and just they're willing to take more chances and more risk. And we've seen that in the games that they've played to date. And at times it probably hasn't worked. They've been maybe kicking long balls away, and things that things that I would never have seen, you know, for the last few years playing, and because we probably would have got crucified for it. So, look, I think the big thing is there's a lot of fresh lads, young lads have come in as well, and they're just expressing themselves, and they're not used to probably the methodical and the setups and the structures and, you know, everything which sort of epitomise what Tyrone were about the last number of years. They sort of tried to change the script and rip it up and go, look, lads, just go out there and really give it a go. And that sometimes can work. And, you know, it's yet to be seen, but it's worked this far. And they've come through some, there's no doubt they've come through some hard battles with Donegal and Monaghan. So I do think that they're out there, and as I said, they've just been told to express themselves more. And that's been the biggest thing for me that I think they've, that I can see from watching them in comparison to, you know, the last couple of years I was there.
And Paul, Colin mentioned that Tyrone have had tests from Donegal and Monaghan. The same can't really be said for Kerry. Tipperary possibly have come the closest to them this year. Is that another worry to add on to the list of potential problems, that they haven't been road tested properly yet ahead of a monumental game like this?
Yeah, but I suppose it's probably nothing new. Like, obviously, Barry last year when Tip won Munster, Kerry have dominated like over the last decade. So they've probably always said Kerry have probably that easier route to the semi than maybe the likes of Tyrone and Donegal and Monaghan, and these two teams who've come through Ulster. And they're probably right to some degree. But look, I'd say they just seem like a team on a mission from the start of the year. And I suppose they've been planning to get to this stage right from the start of the year. And it's probably going to be their first really meaningful test against a very good Tyrone team. Look, I suppose they've run throughout the league from Galway day one to Tyrone down in Clarny and Cork in the Munster Championship. They've dished out some big beatings, you know, and I think they're very impressive. Like, they obviously have fantastic attacking play, but they're just so unselfish, you know. You saw it firsthand down in Clarny. Like, if Hatch lands a goal, they'll just pass it across to the man who's in the better position, and they seem to be playing as a real team, and they're going to need it against probably a very kind of rejuvenated and well-organised Tyrone team this weekend.
And Paul, can I bring you back to your early years with Cork, the glory years I call them, and maybe go back to your Nemo Rangers career, where the ball has been sprayed in directly, maybe diagonally even, to give you a chance inside in the full forward line, and Darren McCurry looks to be, you know, speaking of what Colm said, the shackles are off, the ball's going in a bit quicker. How much of a satisfaction would an inside forward get from ball coming in quicker in the modern game, I guess is what I'm trying to say to you?
Yeah, he looks revitalised, in fairness to him. He looks in great shape, you know. I was reading as well that he kind of worked on his competing, you know, for the ball over the head and for those diagonal balls, because the way the game's played now, it's not going to be perfect. You're not going to get a good ball too often, but I'd say he's loving it, to be honest with you. And I think what's great for him is you have the likes of, obviously McShane came back the last day, but Matty Donnelly's kind of going in there, big physical players, and it's maybe freeing him up a little bit more. But Tyrone, in fairness, always have tidy forwards, you know, Mark Bradley and Derek Hanavan, now another young lad coming through, and he's the one that's kind of clicked on this year. He's really kind of stylish flair player, and I'd say he must be loving it. You'd hope now that the COVID doesn't affect Tyrone's energy levels, and they stick to that kind of way they've been playing, and tried to change a bit this year. And I think he'll probably, after the Monaghan game in Croke Park, he'll be buzzing to get back there.
Colm, my little daughter's back to school next week. Maths wouldn't be her favourite subject, so I sat down with her for a few moments today to go through a bit of a complex puzzle. But it was easier than trying to find an answer to Niall Morgan's kick-out strategy. Can you explain to me what's going on there? The absolute chaos that's been caused by it. It's probably pushing up on the opposition kick-out, but can you talk me through what Niall Morgan brings to any team that's playing with him, and maybe that any team that faces him as well?
Yeah, look, Niall, I suppose Niall isn't a goalkeeper, is what I'd be first and foremost thing I'd say about him. Like, Niall, he is an outfielder. I played against him numerous times for our club, and he's always been a very difficult man to mark out the pitch, never mind in goals. So, look, it's been a strange one. I can't say I expected to see what he was doing. I think pushing up on the man marked guys for kick out stuff probably isn't the best option for what Tyrone are about at the moment, but I can see the merit. Like, we toyed with it a few years ago with trying to take him, you know, trying to stop, say, for example, myself sweeping and letting him play as that sweeper role, because he's so comfortable at the pitch, and he's an incredibly good reader of the game, so I can see what the guys are trying to do there. They're trying to, you know, perhaps create the extra man and really put teams under pressure for kickouts and whatnot. But it'll be very, very interesting to see whether they persist with that in such a big occasion. They obviously, the Ulster final, they did it, and I'm not sure whether he's been directed by management or whether he's probably took it on himself a wee bit. But
would he have convinced Mickey Hart to go for that policy, Colm?
Probably not. I don't think we would have. But look, Niall is very comfortable in himself, and he really can. Like I've spoken a few times about this before, and I'm all for Niall coming out and trying to create overlaps. And he's a very, very intelligent footballer, playing at club level, so he knows when to give the ball. He can deliver kick passes in, and, you know, creating them overlaps can gain a massive advantage, especially for turnovers and whatnot as well. So, in my head, I'd love to see him continue that trend at the weekend, and to some degree. But it's a massive, you know, it's a massive risk if he comes out and continues to do what he does, and maybe they get caught. They nearly did get caught against Monaghan for a goal. But look, it's something from that we probably haven't seen in the game. We've seen teams sort of toy with it, but I think Tyrone need to bring something different to this game. They're massive underdogs. It might be in my heart, I do think that they're probably in a really good place, you know, the way things have went the last few weeks. But to bring that sort of edge and something that maybe Kerry aren't expecting, I think he needs to probably continue to do something along those lines, to try and obviously, you know, stifle Kerry's kick out, or, you know, help out himself coming forward. So it's a risk, but I do think it's a risk it's her own should consider and probably take, because they are such massive underdogs, and if they can throw something different at Kerry, then, you know, it could go a long way for, you know, staying in the game and potentially getting over the line.
And Paul, the kick-out strategy will be crucial. What would you expect to see from Niall Morgan at the weekend, and Kerry's response to that?
Yeah, I thought, like, Kerry, I think right from their first game against Galway, they've been full kind of press. And they put four up, and in Clarny as well, their own keeper was shooting up to be the last man out around their 45, and they had Cork and all sort of bother. Cork couldn't go short in the first half, and then obviously the Hall Martin got injured, and Mark White is a big long kick up, but they just dominated. They seem to have numbers under the breaks, and I think it's been a strength and something they've worked on all year. And I think actually in Clarny, I think they catch Morgan as well with I think Gavin White got a goal where he kind of lobbed him. So looked out, that's a major part of their game. But I think I'd agree with Cullum, like Morgan will, and Tyrone's probably long kick out strategy is probably a bit more developed than Cork, so I think they will test Kerry's press a little bit more, you know. And I agree with Cullum, I think Tyrone will probably have to try something different.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'd love to see Matty Donnelly and maybe Kyle McShane inside with McCurdy floating, and, you know, like Brian Hurley caused a lot of trouble for Kerry in the first half, you know, with that bit of physicality, and maybe two guys in there might give him a few problems.
Yeah, and almost a Twin Towers sort of a job in there, like maybe Cork have had previously as well, Paul. Just in terms of Paddy Clifford, everybody knows about David and everybody speaks about David, but first of all, how impressed are you with Paddy Clifford's development this season?
Yeah, he's been first class, really. Like, I think you kind of list talking down here, like you'd say, the biggest criticism maybe why he didn't get on the team previously is maybe his temperament, and might have had a bit of a short fuse, but that seems to be gone, and he seems to be really kind of level-headed. He just seems to get lost in work, first of all. You know, he really works very hard for the team, gets a lot of turnovers, and like all of them, he's really classy in the ball. He's given some very long deliveries outside the boot. Seanny O'Shea got a goal, just remembering against, I think it was Clare, from his pass after a turnover. So he's kind of up there as one of the favourites of player of the year, I'd say, at the moment. He's just kind of really added to their forward line, I'd say. You know, maybe in his first year, he might have been just hoping to work away and get through and contribute, but he's definitely, I'd say, after Seanny O'Shea and his brother, probably the next man up as their most important forward.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely in the Football of the Year contender ranks for sure. Colm, just a last word to you on your side of things. What are Tyrone going to have to do to win this game at the weekend?
Look, obviously, I say Kerry are going in rightly so heavy favourites. I think the key for Tyrone is probably staying in the game for the first, trying to do probably what Cork did for a period of the game, where they're stay in the game and stay in touch as long as possible, because I think I even look back to a few years ago when Kerry nipped us, we were fully in control of that game, and I think if Tyrone can stay tight and stay close, they seem to be finishing games fairly strong. I sort of agree with Paul in the way, looking at the personnel lineups and stuff. I do think they have to try. I would love to see Matty and McShane inside, and maybe even McKenna alongside them and stuff, and really cause. I think that the question marks over Kerry's defence hasn't really been answered to yet. And we all know how prolific the forward line and their kick pass and how much damage they can do to teams. But I just feel that Tyrone need to throw the kitchen sink at the forward line and say, look, let's test these guys out. Let's see if they can take us on, because Tyrone's biggest asset at the moment, without doubt, is their forward line. You have your McKenna, your McShane. I'm not sure if he's fully fit. I'm not sure if he's fully match fit. He might just probably play a bit part, but you've likes of Darren McCurry, he's flying. Matty seems to be coming in at the right time. You've Derek Gallaman coming in, Sludden coming in. With so many options, probably too many options, probably in the forward line. And I think they have to throw, they're going to have to throw the kitchen sink at this and sort of, do something different around, long balls, get it in top of the big man. Unless he can carry deal with it, because Croke Park's a very, very big place, very, very, very hard to defend, and I suppose why Tyrone has probably been so negative for a few years. When you get the wide open spaces there, them boys can do damage. If they get one-on-one with their players, like Matty Donnelly and Sludden and that, they'll go past you. They will take you on. If Tyrone can stay in the game long enough and start opening up them spaces, I think they'd give them a really good chance.
And Paul, I just get the feeling you feel that Kerry are potentially more balanced than Tyrone.
Yeah, maybe. I'd agree as well with Cullum. I think Kerry's back line, probably the only time they were tested probably so far this year was against Dublin in the league, and they were under a bit of pressure in the first half there, but other than that, they've been pretty good. I'd slightly go for Kerry by a couple of points. I just think they're kind of flooding men back into the middle third, try to get a plus one, and then use their kick passing and keeping an outlet on the half hour line as their means of attack and counter attacking. I'd go for Kerry just about, but I think it'll be a really good game. I kind of enjoy watching Tyrone a bit this year too.
Yeah, no, they are good to watch. And Paul, the Electric Ireland Minor All Ireland Football Final between Meath and Tyrone as well is on at 1 o'clock on Saturday. You're an Electric Ireland ambassador. That's a novel enough pairing, isn't it? 2012 and 2013, since the sides last contested an All Ireland final.
Yeah, it's great, I suppose. Starting with Meath, they would have beaten Dublin quite comfortably in the Leinster final, 3-8 to 1-3, which would have been a really good result from, and did a good kind of good solid display against Sligo. I think the game was won in the first half, and they absorbed a lot of pressure in the second half. And look, they have some really good players. Sean Leonard, wing back, is really good, and their two danger men would be Hugh Harkin and Oisín Amoracú inside the inside forward line. So look, they kind of two a comprehensive win against Dublin and then a 5-point win against Sligo. So look, they're it's good to see Meath on the up again, I suppose, after their seniors gave Dublin a good display in the Leinster final this year. So look, if they can win that, it'll be a big fill up, and I suppose Cullen would probably know a bit more about the Tyrone lads than me. They did a very good win against Donegal in the Ulster final. Donegal would have been well organised, got a lot of bodies back, and then in the semi-final, obviously they beat my own county, Cork, very convincingly. They could have had 5 or 6 goals, 3 or 4 in the first half, and they got 8 unanswered points in the second half. Savage work rate, very strong midfield, and then the likes of Ronan Cassidy, Conor Owens, Gavin Potter are all good forwards. So they're really impressive. I give Tyrone a nod there and that.
Well, could be a Tyrone double yet. Paul Kerrigan, Electric Ireland ambassador, and Colm Cavanagh, thanks so much. We will have Darren O'Sullivan on to talk about Kerry tomorrow, so don't forget that as well. Thanks very much, gentlemen, for your time.
Game on. Gaelic football.
Yeah, we're almost out of time. 7:45, Shamrock Rovers versus Flora Tallinn in Tallaght. Paul Curry, interesting team news from that.
Yeah, just one change from Shamrock Rovers, and it doesn't surprise me that it's coming in the middle of the pitch, based on what we were saying earlier, that there was major gaps last week when they played out in Estonia. I guess the one surprise, Damien, is the fact that Richie Towle has come out of the starting 11 for Danny Mandrew. Richie Towle was brought in, for quite a bit of money for an Irish club. You'd expect him to play in big nights like tonight, but he's gone with Danny Manju. I'm not surprised not being too many changes. Get the same team out that played them last week and see if they can make more of the tie this week.
What difference does that change make, Paul?
Well, Danny Mandrejo is probably more a player who's going to play in the final third, who's going to be closer to Flora Tallon's goal, who's maybe going to pop up with a goal or get closer to Green and Burke and look to create. So maybe he's thinking that he's more likely to pop up with a goal than Richie Tell. And of course, they're going to need two tonight, a minimum of two.
Yeah, OK, well, very best luck to Rovers. 7:45 versus Flora Tallon. The game is on RTE2. Paul, really enjoyed the chat tonight. Thanks a million. Thanks also to Ronan Lawler, our producer. Jarlett Holland was our BCO. Ronan McCall was on sound, keeping us on air. Marie's back tomorrow, and Tara Stewart is up next. From myself, Damien Lawler, thanks a million for listening.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Firm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets, available in selected stores nationwide. 2